copy of the minutes. Do I have a
motion approved
for the April 6th meeting?
Second.
Moved and seconded to approve the minutes from the April 6th meeting. All those in favor, give the governance.
Sorry.
Yes?
Yes. Sorry, I'm a little lost. I gotta get my minutes.
Oh, it's fine. Committee?
Aye.
Chairman, committee members, supervisors, we can have some comments. I have nothing major here, but I have a... So we'll move on. Division reports. Dan, your first this evening, the golf division.
Alrighty. Yeah, we're following our 2015 business plan. We're sending out an email blast to over 16,000 people. One of the parts of our success right there. Got a big email database, and really happy to announce that, you know, when we send stuff out, it really gets noticed and gets people to action. Our spring scramble was last Saturday. We had 48 players there. We got a ladies spring fling next Saturday. We got a spring shootout on May 16th. Got a couple of demo days coming up. Tour Edge on Thursday, May 14th from 3 to 7, and the Nike on Saturday, May 23rd from 10 to 2. Just trying to get a lot of events, you know, right away early in the season so that we can pique the interest of our guests. Happy to say that we had an unaudited positive fund balance at the year end of 2014 of $88,482. This is the third straight year with a positive fund balance, so that's going well. We're moving ahead with the Caddy and Leadership Academy plan. It's really exciting. We talked about the possibility of even having two of the top guys from the PGA and the president of the USGA coming to view the program. So everything is going forward as we speak. I think that we're going to have caddies out at Petrifying Springs starting June 16th. Hopefully these kids will even get an opportunity to go up for the PGA Championship to Whistling Straits and meet maybe some of the tour players up there. So, you know, real exciting for them. All the leagues are up and running. They're starting, some were starting this week, but all other ones have already started. So we got to add four new leagues this season. So real happy with that news, too. We're receiving outstanding comments on the conditions of the golf course. We are rolling the greens with a roller, and the greens are people are stating that the greens have never rolled better. We're actually getting some break in the greens. They're firming up and being a little faster. The negative is, you know, we have still some problems with our sand traps, especially at Bright Bay. We don't have very many at Pets, but sand traps need to be fixed up, and we're working on that as much as we can. But it's just over the years, so much till has mixed in with the sand, it's hard to get it to be sand traps anymore. But projects that we're working on, we're going to hopefully do the maintenance shop yard at Petrifying Springs. The highway department hopefully will be paving that as soon as they can. We purchased 78 new golf cars and 4 utility vehicles. The 78 new golf cars are at Brightondale, so we have 144 over there and 64 at Petrifying Springs. We will be working on the deep well and renovating that at Brightondale. We put in new variable drives for the Pets pump house, and we're going to be updating some of the equipment and the fence along the sewage treatment plant at Brightondale. Everything is rolling along well. Had some real nice weekends so far this year, and that's really made a difference.
So I have a question. We have a new food and beverage manager.
Mm-hmm.
For the third year in a row, is it? Yeah, there's just kind of move on.
Yeah, Debbie Tover took a job down at another golf course, Bittersweet, that had year-round full-time benefits. And then Erin, she was becoming a dental assistant. And then Carly got into nursing with Aurora, and now Brianna She is a Carthage College graduate. We brought her aboard last year. At the end of the season, we kind of promoted her to assistant manager, and then now she's our food and beverage manager. It's a difficult position to keep seasonally.
Right. And what is her major? What is she going to move on to?
Yeah, her major was criminal justice. So, not real sure yet. We're hoping that she sticks around. She's just unbelievable at organization and cleanliness of the facility. It's never been better. You know, it's really, really nice. Started the fish fry Friday night. We served 35 fish fries.
So. Yeah, when do we start the fish fry at Brighton?
That one, you know, staffing wise and the amount that we served the last couple of years were dwindling at Brightondale, so we're analyzing really the profitability of having that there. You know, that we're thinking that if we have it at one facility, maybe more people get more people going to Pets, and you know, it'll be more profitable for the facilities just by having it at one facility.
But we didn't make money yet, right now.
Well, it's for the amount of time and preparation and labor that we put into it. It's doubtful that we made money at Brightondale.
Now, Ray, maybe we could share with the committee what you and I discussed about the alcohol question.
Oh, yeah. So, as the committee had asked last committee meeting to follow up with seeing what the alternatives would be for getting alcohol at county parks and county parks and county golf. And so I talked with the Corporation Council, and there's a couple different ways to go about it. There's kind of a formal way, which would be for a formal resolution to get drafted, approved by the committee, forwarded on to the board, and then forwarded up to the state legislature, asking them to look into that specific statute to see if it could be changed. And then there's a more informal route. And I should say on the formal route, there's kind of the standalone version. That's what I just explained. And then there's we could also pass a resolution or attempt to get one coordinated with the WCA and kind of do it a group effort and get some other counties on board and try to do it that way. And then the informal route would be to just send a letter to some of our representatives, just asking them to look into the possibility, kind of kick the tires up in Madison and see what would be the traction for something like this, to get a better feel to see if we should actually try to formally proceed with things. And when I talked with Chairman Elverman last week, we thought it would be best to try the informal route, get a letter drafted. I'm going to draft one under his name, and then we can send that to Samantha Kirkman and probably Bob Wirch and just see if they can investigate and kind of get back to us and say if this has got, it may have traction with other municipalities or it may not, but at least we can kind of informally poke around and see if it makes sense to pursue it that way.
Our feeling right now, and mine, and then my discussion with Ray, was that with the legislature now wrangling with the governor over the budget, and with the wrangling that went on in Kenosha County over the casino issue, that our representatives are, I say it publicly here, we have no press here, but our representatives are in that type of circle, their own one right now. So having Samantha on board, as she was with that project, knowing you know, that other state officials are going to say, yeah, we kind of want to help you out here, and getting something to her and having her start something, because it's a state issue, and if we go through the WCA, maybe we'll ask them. Maybe we can find out, as Ray said, if there's traction there. What we thought, that we don't want to drop this issue, but we want to see if we can do it without involving 71 other counties.
So that would be the plan, is to do it as a statewide initiative that would affect all counties similar in our position where we are.
Right. Well, eventually, that law would have to be changed in order for us to be able to do it.
I think it's worth pursuing. I do see a maybe substantial fight from certain entities who have interests along those lines established. They're not going to roll over for it. They're going to fight.
And that's why we think possibly doing it with Samantha here, because, yes, Tabor Lake will fight.
Right.
Private golf courses will fight. Yeah. The most powerful lobby in the state, some say, is the Tabor. Actually, it's the highway people.
The roads.
Yep, the road builders.
Right.
Do anybody have any questions for Dan?
Just to follow up, how are we doing this year for our volunteer labor? I know we've had work release in the past. We've had various other volunteers. Where are we shaping up with that?
It's not going well. We've lost our work crew due to some changes in their ability to, I guess, earn time served, you know. So it's basically all falling back on our seasonal employees right now.
Did we have them at all for last year, last season?
Yeah. Yeah, we had it last year.
We had a substantial amount of volunteer effort, and it seemed to be a good deal, right?
Oh, having the work crew was, yeah, a real big deal. Yeah, it was, we got, you know, having, you know, one person supervising six others, you know, and there was substantial clearing. You know, that's a lot of what the notoriety that Brightendale has gotten is about that.
Had we purchased a vehicle, some van, I recall, for a specific work release?
We had one prior to my arrival in 2009, and then we got one that was going to the auction from the Sheriff's Department.
So the hang-up is on the judicial end, the court end? Is that what, just not available to us, or what?
Yeah, I wanted to jump, because we're trying to figure this out right now. I've got Dan, we talked last week, he's going to be putting together kind of a short fact sheet of how many hours we had work crew out there the last year for sure, maybe going back further, because he's averaged about six guys at each course. They've done a substantial amount of work in keeping the courses in good shape, both clubhouse as well as the courses themselves. There's been some change in how the judges are sent. I'm not exactly sure, and that's what we're trying to unravel. We've heard a couple different theories, some from the Sheriff's Department, some conflicting theories. Some of it is that the guys, there are more guys going on the ankle bracelet as opposed to doing Huber, and the $75 a day they have to pay back for their Huber versus the $25 a day they have to pay back when they're on the ankle bracelet. We've been told that some of the guys would rather stay home and watch The Simpsons and pay their $25 as opposed to working somewhere labor, either working at Mike's shop in facilities, or because his is greatly reduced. He's got a couple of guys right now that we've got, but it's down probably, I'm going to say, it's a third or fourth of the number of guys that we've had in years past. So there just isn't the bodies available. We haven't figured out exactly what's going on. We've got, like I said, we've gotten a couple different theories from the judges. I know Judge Schrader was an extremely strong proponent of work. He kind of got it started probably 20 years ago, was the main motivator behind it anyways. So I think there's still the desire to do it, but there was some, one thing was implied that these guys, when they did this community service, they would get time served reduced by their doing community service, and there were some legal questions about whether that was kosher or not. I don't know if any of it is fact or fiction or what it is at this point, but like I said, I talked with Dan. We're going to put together a fact sheet of what it's actually costing us so we can sit down with the executive and probably the chief judge and probably the sheriff and DA to find out what. We don't have the pool of workers that we used to have, and it's going to affect things.
Burger King and cigarettes. That's the first thing that pops into my mind. Years ago.
Go ahead.
We were doing a rugby field for the Wrigleys, and we had rock hounds, rock pickers that picked up a certain size rock. Rugby horses from Europe can't have that size rock. They even had to be smaller. So Mark Carroll, who was Power Slate Construction at the time, he and I were working this project. And the first day we went to the Walworth County Jail, we picked up, I think, three people. And they had to walk out there with buckets and pick up rocks. That was the job. But we sweetened the pot. We went and got cartons of Marlboros and Burger King. The next day, we had 12 guys. And then they were fighting to come. I know Josh Schroeder won't go out with Burger King and Marlboro.
Yeah.
It used to work.
I like the thinking.
Yeah. That was Mark Carroll's thinking.
Like I say, it's going to have a material impact on both facilities and the courses if we can't get the number of guys that we've had, at least close to the number of guys we've had the past five years probably. Yeah.
Six years.
That's what made Brightdale's.
All the brushing, right?
The reuse, all the grass growing better, all the.
Yep.
The visibility, the speed of play, the whole thing that I've heard.
Yeah.
It's a big concern.
Even the nonprofits don't have them anymore.
No.
Puzzle Prairie used to actually get six of them, and they had to disband their crew and their supervisors. Same as Parks and Golf.
Well, by us, we're paying kids to get in trouble in Randall. Just so that they got somebody picking up garbage on weekends.
I know that Nate said that he didn't shovel at all for Human Services this winter either.
Winter.
Yeah, he said he didn't do that at all.
They had the crews out for it? Or who shoveled?
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, for the elderly?
It was for the elderly, the Department of Aging.
Okay, yeah.
They were not volunteers, community service.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, we should definitely take a look at that, I think. I mean, it's a source of labor that I think it's good for both parties. You get these people out working a little bit of self-respect and helps the county. I know when I said on finance, it did come through that we actually set the rates for the monitors, the ankle bracelets, whatever. And that came through our committee's recommendation from the sheriff, so maybe we can get some type of equity or parity, but at least make it a level playing field where they have a choice. Yeah, you can get out and work at the same rate, but what I'm understanding from you, it's all skewed towards civil, not volunteer. Then I think there's a flaw in that system. So.
That was a comment from one of the deputies that's involved in the program. Again, I don't know if that's fact or fiction, but that was one of the comments.
Even with the ankle bracelet, they still can get their time off, but a lot of them would rather just sit home and watch. Is that the Simpsons?
And I'm a Simpsons fan.
Administratively.
Well, as bureaucracy runs, it's too late for this year.
Right.
But we will plan on, like I say, we were going to put together a report that kind of analyzes so we can come with a more formal thing, and then hopefully by that time we'll have a better feel for what really is driving the change in what we had last year versus what we got this year.
Right. Good luck getting anything out of judges right now.
Yeah.
Not a happy group. Anything else for Nathan? Mike, facilities.
Well, with that topic, I'll start out with something I don't have on my list, Kemper Center. Normally we'd have a work crew go down there and do a cleanup after winter. The storm we had in the early fall, late summer, was cleaned up quite a bit, but there's still a lot of debris laying around on the grass, so work crew would normally go down there and do that, but since we don't have them, group from Journey Church stepped up, 20 of them in fact, and they're volunteering a week from Sunday to go down there for 2 or 3 hours to just take buckets and rakes and pick up rocks and get them out of the grass and clean it up the best we can. But normally work crew would do that. Detention center project, I've got the slider door retrofit. Should be completed tomorrow. There's one door left to do, so I actually won't report on it next month. It'll be closed out and done, so that project went well. No problems at all. I'm glad that it's done. So, any questions on that? Final questions? And then the last thing I have is staffing. We have two custodian positions open on second shift at the safety building. We interviewed Wednesday 10 people. Had a really good group finally, so it was a lot different than all the interviewing I had done all year long last year. So out of that, we got a bunch of candidates that are good. We made offers to the top two, and then the rest are going on a hiring list. So we'll find out soon if their backgrounds check out and they can pass physicals. So hoping the end is near on those openings.
I just wanted to add to that because I talked to Mike after I had talked to you that this was the most encouraging news we've had on the staffing front and facilities. I still think fundamentally our starting wage in that department is under $12. It's $11.90 in that area an hour. And I hope we are able to get some of these folks, and I hope we're able to keep them, more importantly, after we get them trained up, because that's still one of the areas that wasn't addressed in this most recent pay plan. We haven't looked at facilities. There's a number of areas that haven't been looked at yet, but that's one of them. So I'm hoping that, because this was very encouraging when Mike told me this. I think he was surprised by the quality of the folks we got. We got some fairly, I'm going to say, non-traditional candidates, and this probably is going to be a good thing for us. So some of the folks that applied, I think, hopefully will have a work out successfully, pass their drug tests and whatever else they got to pass, and we'll be able to hire some folks.
And these people are full time.
Yes.
Yeah. So they get into our retirement plan.
Yep. They do get the benefits. Yep. Okay. And that's the thing that I'm hoping will be enough to have them stick around.
Because when you start with Amazon now, it's $13 or $14 an hour, 401k, health, dental, eye.
Right.
So, if we've got people starting at $11.90, therein lies the rub.
Yes.
Yeah, it's a little bit more money, and it's not custodial work.
Right. You know, so as Ray said to me the other day, you don't have to be scrubbing stuff in the jail.
Right.
You know, bottom guy on the totem pole, custodial. Hopefully. I'm hoping that I know this plan that we've have been working on and that we're adopting possibly. I'm hoping that we can then individually get into some of these items. I know a key item for John is their full-time, whatever you call these things,
long-term
seasonal. People that were in danger of losing because they're you know, monitored on hours and headed out the door if they get a chance. And these are some really good people.
Very skilled. Yeah, we're very fortunate. We got some long-term seasonals in golf and parks that are very skilled guys and girls.
And just so the committee knows, what I'm talking about, that there's, I'm not picking and choosing. I don't know these people personally, but there's a long-term seasonal that I met and watched his work in the parks. And he was asking me about a reference, and he was applying for a janitorial job at Wilmot High School. And I said, why? I didn't know that he was, you know. He said, well, I worked through the winter, and in July, I'm laid off. Is there a limit to what, 15?
15, 60, yep.
60, yeah. Mm-hmm. He's got a young family started. He says, I'm laid off in July for 3 months. So, and John gave him recommendations also. You know, he's a good guy. But Christ, if we could pay the guy $2 more an hour, he wouldn't be looking.
Right.
Yeah. Or if he could work 1,800 hours, he wouldn't be looking.
Right.
So those are internal things here. You know, with, I think we've got the only group of people like that between parks and golf. And
yeah, I don't think Brookside might has some part-timers, but I don't. It's not quite the same scenario like we've got. And we know that in parks and golf, there's seasonal folks we're going to need for peak season. And even if they comfortably could work 1,800 hours, given the nature of how long our season is, we can't work them that long.
No.
Because then the health insurance and everything kicks in, and it would cause a huge increase in costs.
Exactly. And, I mean, everyone is sensitive to that also, but you would certainly like to have the ability, if you were going to lose somebody, to be able to try to find a way.
Try to keep them.
Or, you know, that gentleman's case, he's applied to the highway and, you know, trying to stay with something. So, in Dan's situation, with not having the work crew, know, you would like to be able to turn some people loose on those. So, anything else?
That's it.
Any questions for Mike? Frank, we will move on to you.
Mr. Chairman, just a quick update on the KCAP projects. We're trying to get a few detail items closed out. You may have noticed the guys buffing all the windows on the first floor of KCAP for quite a while now. The contractor, when he cleaned the building, some guys were scraping the mortar and things off the windows, and one of the razor blades had a nick on it. Scratched up most of the windows on the first floor. So that company's been working at it for months. They say they've got it now. We've done some preliminary checks. They're cleaning the windows and this week, and we're going to take a look at it on Friday. Hopefully, it meets our criteria for approval. So get that one checked off the list. The new Queen Mary, the new evaporative cooling tower in back of KCAP, disappointingly sprung some leaks. And so we met with Martin Peterson and the factory rep and took a look at what solutions, what they did at this point, and what's the factory approved solutions. So we're working kind of on two different avenues, but we're looking to get an extended warranty out of Martin Peterson for their work. So we just did that today. The north entrance, the new north entrance to wrap and everything, we've got a few issues with the concrete. We're getting some spalling some places after this first winter time. And we've got one crack on the rise. So we've got the architect involved and the contractor. The contractor came back and inspected it. So we're meeting with the architect, in fact, tomorrow to talk about this and a few other issues and see what the remedy is. The sidewalk on the east side, we've got a little bit of settling, and also we don't exactly like the way it matches up with the side of the building, so we're doing a comprehensive study on all the heights involved and the measurements and trying to see what the best solution for that is.
The city's involved in some of that, right? The
city is involved in some of that. The administration has reached out to them, so trying to get our ducks in a row by doing a comprehensive survey with our civil engineer in house. The elevations involved.
Right.
Any questions on that end? Moving on to the 60th Street Tower, the last remaining part is just the demo of the concrete slabs, re-landscaping there at the old tower site, and removing the apron and curb, restoring the apron and curb there. We finally got the last quotations in, and we are the final approval. They've got the permit into the city for that, so hopefully there's no snags there. And if everything goes all right with the city, we're hoping to be done by the end of next week. Any other questions? I'll move on to the building demo projects. There was some hiccups with the bonds. The city requires a bond, the county requires a bond, and it's kind of an unusual situation. The contractors say they haven't seen that in any other place, so came up with a way to, instead of having two sets of bonds, which would cost the county extra money, to try to have one bond that covers both the city and county. So there's a little bit of confusion there getting the right permit in. They did. They turned everything into the city, or the right bonding that had to go in with the permits. They turned it into the city. So we're awaiting them, we're waiting the city to get back to us. The contractor with this delay might have a little conflict with a DOT project he has going on, but it might work out okay because We Energies is relocating the utilities underground, so we get them out of, we had a parking lot or a pole that would be right in the middle of the future proposed or possible parking lot, so we're going to put everything underground. And it looks like the timing of it might work out to where We Energies will be done and the demo contractor would come in, and then there would be time between that and when, if everything works out, the parking lot. So right now we're keeping our fingers crossed that the city, the permits and the bonding, that everything goes smooth. questions. I'll move on to the courthouse exterior lighting. As you know, as part of the courthouse restoration, we redid all the lighting on the outside of the building, which turned out really, really well. A lot of people, a lot of compliments. But we found that the color of the lighting, we had a specific color that we had, and the color of the lighting, some of them were shifting to more of a yellow light from white light. Called up Cree, they replaced a couple of them, and then some other ones started to degrade, and they found out that during that particular type of light and that particular series of production, they had some problems with the layering of the materials on the LED, and they were starting to come apart. So Cree stepped up to the plate and not only replaced the lights, but paid for labor to replace them. So those are all replaced now, and they all do match the color. So it was a nice local company stepped up. And just as a side note, we did the lighting to the administration building. So when you get a chance, take a look at that as you walk in. The exterior lighting. Any questions?
Yes. So it wasn't actually the drivers to the LEDs. It was actually the laminating of the LED itself that was the issue with it.
Yes, yeah, it was, and they've got a whole PowerPoint presentation. We actually met, we went up to Cree, they gave us, one part of it, but we wanted to see their entire line, what they had to offer, what advantages they had over their competitors, and to see what we could do in the future here, because we had some great, not exactly offers, but we had got some great pricing for them because we were a local municipality. So to see along those lines of what we could do in the future working together. And that was part of it where they explained what actually was going wrong with that. And that is no longer the case with the lights on KCAB or the new lights that are going on that did go on in the courthouse.
Because we had an opportunity, we just did that last week it was, and we wanted to meet with their product development engineer. Some of you might know Eric Haugard. I know he was a city alderman for a while. I don't think he is now, but is he still?
No, he still is.
He still is. Okay. Solid guy. He's the head of their product development engineering group. And so we got to really dig into stuff that probably the average customer wouldn't get to. They were very open with us. We wanted to know where they were at in kind of their product development cycle because of this thing that we experienced. What did they do to resolve that? And there was a couple of things that impressed us, I think, with what it is they're bringing to the table. Cree, it appears, is kind of the head and shoulders above every other LED manufacturer out there right now, largely because of what Rude Lighting, what they had started as Rude. And the takeaways for us were, one, they're the only company that has a 10-year warranty, and as we've seen, they stand behind their product. Everybody else has a 5-year. And I think the fundamental reason for that is if you buy... You go to Menards and pick up an LED that's made by Sylvania or Fight or any of the ones, and they're a 10,000-hour life, and 200 hours later, it's flickering in your living room. I know because it's happened to me. Well, that's because in Cree's case, all of their core technology, like this thing that delaminated, they knew that because they produced that product. It's a proprietary product that they produced down in North Carolina. They produce all their core pieces of technology that make those things work either in Racine in the Sturtevant plant or in North Carolina. They don't outsource any of their core technology. And they actually provide it to a bunch of other folks aftermarket. So I personally came away with a real strong feeling for their products, where they're at with stuff and how they stand behind it and where they're headed with the next generation of stuff. We're not going to propose to be a sole source for them, but I am going to try to figure out a way that we can do like a preferred supplier so that we can, based on their pricing that they're providing to Racine and Kenosha municipalities, kind of formalizing some kind of an arrangement so that we can kind of still be one of their proving grounds and kind of demonstration places for them, and then we also reap the benefit of having kind of the latest and greatest, most energy efficient technology, because they have some amazing stuff they showed us for like parking structures and stuff. So it was very, very interesting. It was a good couple hours.
There has been a history of them, not just with Kenosha County, but the city as well. 39th Ave was a pilot project. That's got to be 5 years ago anyway, a portion of that. And I think they had issues with that as well. The vendor stepped up, said we're going to take care of this. So it has been a good arrangement. The fact that you have preferential pricing, and you get service, and it's basically local. So it's kind of a, it's a three-peat, it's a three-way window, so that's good. Back to KCAP, are we using the same similar type of lighting there as on the courthouse? Can you tell us about that?
Yes, it's the same color lighting. We scaled back. Those lights, the ledge on KCAP is very close to the building, so we're only 10 inches away, 11 inches away. So we went with a light. We mocked them up back last, I think it was budget time. We mocked them up, and we looked at the spacing and how we could get it. It's so close to the building, we actually went with a light that was 20% lower light output, same color, but lower light output than the courthouse. And that way, it was, because it was so close, it didn't produce a big hot spot against the building. And also, we wanted to complement the courthouse, not over try to outshine the courthouse.
No, we wouldn't want that. We don't go and outshine the courthouse.
No,
that's not good. So that's complete, or that's in the works? Or?
That's complete.
That's my question.
Any others? Very good.
I passed out a proposed asphalt paving program for 2015 on the County Trunk Highway System. We've been using the same pavement management system for many, many years, and for good reason. I think it's been a very reliable tool that we use to determine which roads are in need of resurfacing, and also I think there's a lot of value in being consistent when you're looking at pavement conditions, so that year to year you're comparing apples to apples. So we went out, rated all of the segments of County Trunk Highway again this spring, as we do every year, entered that information into the system, and developed a list of segments of road in a prioritized way. In that system, all the roads that are physically in the worst condition may not necessarily be the highest priority, and that's due to the fact that that system factors in things like traffic volumes, route importance, density of business and residents in the area, and factors those into prioritizing the need for resurfacing. So what I passed out is a list and a map indicating the proposed program. Typically, and this year being typical, we budget for 13 miles of paving. That we found historically will cover the deficiencies in the roads. This year, we did get very favorable bid results when we bid the asphalt material. So on that upper portion of the list of projects, we actually ended up with 15.3 miles, so it's a little more than 2 miles than what we anticipated. Those are the projects that are funded in the CIP. The two projects below are in the Local Road Improvement Program, which also is a part of the CIP. But is 50% state funded. So we were able to gain another almost 6.6 miles of resurfacing in the Local Road Improvement Program. And those two projects that are in the local road improvement program have to be bid out. They were bid out. Payne and Dolan was the low bidder, and they were awarded the contracts. Like I said, that's another 6.6 miles, so we're getting almost 22 miles of county highways are going to be paved this year, which is very helpful to get caught up. Currently, we have about 51 miles of road that in the pavement management system indicates the need for resurfacing. So we're almost half of what is in need is getting paved, and that hasn't happened in a long time. So this is a really good step in the right direction to pick up a lot of the deficiencies in the pavement condition of the system. So also in that top part, there are two projects in the bottom of the county construction projects, Highway E and Highway Y. We were also able to get some state funding to pay for just the material portion of the project. So about 50% of the cost of the material and those two roads will also be state funded. So that's why the $1.7 million figure on the bottom is of actual county funds. It's closer to 1.4, or actually a little bit less than 1.4. That's the proposed program, and if anyone had any questions, I'd be happy to.
This is the best we've been able to do in years.
It really is.
It's a band.
Yeah, I could just add that, you know, we did get the new paver that was approved earlier this year. That's been delivered. It's all set up. It's just going to be a great machine. Real heavy duty, well built, well constructed, very stable machine. And stable is what you need to get a nice smooth pavement when you're the employees, all of the crew that work on the paving crew, and some of the mechanics have all received or are in the process of receiving training provided by the company that built the paver and the company that puts the controls on the paver. So really looking forward to get a lot of production and good quality work out of that machine.
Any questions on any of the paving?
We were going to say next month, if schedule permits, we'd like the committee to take a look at it and kind of check it out. It's one of those pieces of equipment. It would be nice for everybody to see.
Right, before it starts getting real screwed up.
Exactly, before it gets all blacked up, yeah.
You're saying, Gary, it's the last two on the list that receive state funding for the material?
Partial state funding.
Partial state funding. That's great.
Yeah, that helped a lot. And that was factored into this year's budget, too. So between that and the unexpected lower cost of the asphalt, things went real well as far as total mileage.
Well, that's good news. Thanks for taking advantage of that. You know, the paver, lower cost of the asphalt has been the will of the county, but if we can do more in a particular season, we will. So it's good news.
I was just going to add a brief thing, Mr. Chairman. That's that just to give the committee an update on our search for an assistant for Gary. We had some good interviews, and we aren't in a spot to make anybody an offer yet, but we had some encouraging candidates. We'll leave it at that. I'm hoping by the next committee meeting we'll have more information that we can actually say definitively we've got somebody hired. But we had some encouraging interviews. So.
Now, just so we're clear on this, I understand the methodology is to have your proposed successor work here in the department for a specified period of time. You'd work along with them. I've heard the year time frame, is that more or less what we're looking at?
Yes.
Good.
The positions were put in this year's budget.
Right.
One for Gary's assistant and one for Mr. Rudy's assistant.
Yep.
So that's ongoing also. And John is leaving tomorrow because they've already got somebody that's better than him.
Yeah, they have two people.
No, John, it's not going to be that easy.
Only two.
I thought I'd see if he was alert.
Say it loud enough, I hear you.
He saw me at the store today and was waving, and I didn't see him. Or like,
one can't see, one can't hear.
Right. What's that?
Yeah.
Okay, well, thank you, Gary.
Thank you.
And John?
Katie, master plan, I don't have anything really directly with that, but I did have a college student out of La Crosse get a grant through the university, and the university will be giving us, Kenosha County, $1,000 for helping support what he's going to do. And what he's going to do is do, I think, three kind of classes about sustainability right at Katy Park this summer.
Oh, cool.
So there's something kind of moving along there. The next thing was the Bird City resolution. In order for us to maintain Bird City status, their requirement is that we do a resolution through the governing body of Kenosha County every year. And I did question that to see if we could do it with a proclamation from the exec's office in the newspaper. And they said, no, it has to be by resolution. So before you is a resolution, again, just informing you that International Migratory Bird Day will be the 19th, I believe, of September at the Pringle Nature Center again as a joint effort with us and the city of Kenosha.
It's open to all birds, right?
Pardon?
It's open to all birds, any bird, and
all birds.
non-discriminatory. Yeah.
It's not local bird.
Oh, it's all migratory?
It's just all migratory. Yeah.
What? You have to prove. You can't be one of these shading geese that stays all the way. You have to prove that you actually like it.
Where's your visa on
document?
Right. Local birds.
No. Local birds need not apply.
So, we need would like a motion.
So moved.
Second.
Moved and seconded to submit the resolution for migratory bird day on September 19th. And to observe that at Pringle Nature Center. All those in favor, you're the governor?
Aye.
Committee?
Aye. Aye.
All right. And I'm sorry, Ted. And, you know, some people may think that this is trivial, but as it was pointed out when we did this, when John pursued this and other people, to some people, this is a real quality of life thing, and they see that we are a bird city, bird county. People look at that, and it's important to many people. So it helps our tourism, it helps everything. This isn't a trivial thing.
No, it is. We joke, like you say, but it really is. John says, you know, the number of folks that are at pets in particular, the other parks as well, but pets in particular, there's an incredible amount of feedback we get from folks that are keeping track of how many bluebirds are nesting and how many owls are out. I mean, it's
oh, really, they do.
It's
they
impressive.
Do. Yeah. And you never know where it's coming from, but the observance of this could be horribly important to someone. That could be horribly important to the county.
Mm-hmm. Right. Exactly. Yeah.
You know, again, the Bird City is kind of a collaborative effort.
Yes.
It's the backyard habitat that UW promotes. It's the tree sales that Planning and Development do, the reforestation. So everybody's involved in what it took to do that. So
exactly. Okay.
The next resolution. I'm asking for permission to submit a grant to build mountain bike trails and multi-use trails in what we call the Katy Expansion or Katy West, which is the mining area and a little bit more of the old Mowers Lake property. That would be a 50-50 grant with the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources Stewardship Grant Program. The total estimated cost of the project is $343,000, of which we would be responsible for $171,500. In front of you, I placed a map of what we're kind of a concept of what we're proposing, and it comes up to 1.15 miles of multi-use trails. It comes to 6.85 miles of single track, and 1.84 miles of advanced skills trail, so that would be right in the mining area itself, and those would be the really steep, treacherous ones that a lot of folks like. The other thing is, part of this project, you'll see future skills area, skills 2, pump track, skills 1, and intermediate skills. I didn't have enough of these, but I think there's enough of them over on the table. When we talk about a skills improvement area, if you see the first page here where there's other things, but this is really the one of the ones I could find. The second page is a pump track, and what that is just basically a bunch of moguls for people to just really get cardio going and practice riding. And I couldn't get a good photo of a children's skills area, so I did the best I could there. But anyways, mountain biking is growing again. Mountain bikes are probably more than half of the sales right now, mountain bikes. And I see this as a big draw to the area. And I think it'll make a huge impact on Kenosha County and more so the communities on the west end of the county. And we just, after teaming up with the mountain bike folks that are working at Silver Lake, the interest and enthusiasm is there. So, and again, this is to request permission to submit the grant.
Just a comment, I'm just going to go on record to say, I really do like mountain biking. I think it's a great exercise, and it gets people out, involved, and it's a wonderful sport. When I look at just the contour of these advanced skill trail, something just does pop into my mind real quickly. Before I ask the question, I'm going to ask you, Dennis. You know that terrain out there as well as anybody. Is that pretty much the shores and so forth, the steep parts surrounding the lake? What type of underlying terrain is it? Is that pretty much rock?
Yes. Sand and rock.
Sand and rock. So my question is this, and I'm sure it will come out again as time goes along, engineering studies, and these people that build the trails, they know it far better than I do. But if we have a big rain event, we have a big monsoon that's out there, we've got these trails that are already established on a steep part, are you going to wind up having runoff into your watershed, which may be less than desirable? Do you plant sedges? Do you do something to mitigate that? You know, so that would be just my immediate concern, and I'm sure will be addressed as we go along.
Right, we will. When you look at the single track trails, the blue ones, those are all called sustainable. There's no steep grades in those. Those are meant to not wash out. And that's why when you see how they're switched back and doubled, they're following a certain grade. But when you see the purple ones, those are the advanced trails, and we will work to prevent erosion on those with the type of surfacing and with grasses and other things to control erosion.
Thank you.
help them really studied by the bike people already. Yeah, they went out there, and I thought, I asked them. I said, how the hell are you going to do that?
That's deep.
They look at it, they said, this is perfect. Their exact words, this is beautiful. I mean, that's what they just get excited looking at that.
Well, you know, and then that whole area out there, for the most part, is already disturbed, and we're not hurting anything with the purple trails in that old pit. You know, as far as disturbing or anything, so. But I think there's a lot of folks that really like advanced trails, and you know, we're going to be able to offer almost 2 miles of it for them. So.
Well, I was going to add too, John, is that you know, part of there's a very interested group and an enthusiastic group that wants these things, and by providing them an appropriately designed venue that's going to be challenging and kind of provide fairly top-shelf facilities with minimal effort, because it was an old gravel pit, we can at least then start to manage, I think, better the folks that are illegally using pets and some of the other parks and tearing them up and are creating some environmental issues with washout and things like that, because the trails aren't properly designed.
Right.
And we can say, no, you guys need to be out there. We have facilities for that are top shelf. Go use those. Do not tear up the walking trails that are in pets that are not designed for mountain bike traffic. So it'll help us in the long run.
And once these trails are built, Corba will patrol them and repair them and maintain them. So.
And again, it's another aspect of tourism that goes above and beyond what people think is actually going to happen. When, 4 years ago, I think, the first one was on the Country Thunder Grounds. They had one of these, I call it Iron Man, but it's not. But people slap around a mud, climb the towers and everything. Now, Wilmot Mountain has done it the last 3 years. Richmond has done it the last 3 years. It brings thousands of people. So if we have what they call, just like the guys at Disc Golf at Fox River call state of the art, they do this at this, they'll call it state of the art. They get people from everywhere that come, and tourism in Kenosha County, I'm sure we all read the Kenosha News, you know, 2 weeks ago or a week and a half ago, there was the big article showing it was up 8%, I think, into the large millions of dollars. Mm-hmm. And they do mention, usually they didn't mention Country Thunder, they didn't, but that's huge. That's like $6 billion or something of it. But they did mention the Wilmot Mountain, you know, right. the
Rugged Maniac.
Rugged Maniac.
Yeah, that's the.
Yeah, my sons have done them all over. Mm-hmm. And Richmond is a big one. They've got a permanent one. So something like this, and John knows these people a lot better than I do, but I've met them and they're very serious. And they're organized. Mm-hmm. Very organized.
Now, the other thing that too plays into this is that when I was talking at the state level of the Department of Tourism, they said there's a definite situation here they wanted to fix. They said everybody is driving from south of us to Kettle Moraine, riding their mountain bikes, and driving back to Illinois.
Right. So,
and they said, we got to keep them here overnight. We got to get them to come here and spend money. So with the trail at Silver Lake, and the one at KD and at Kettle Moraine, that should bring a lot of out-of-state dollars, tourism dollars, into Kenosha County. So.
And it will. And then we'll have to build the hotels that we don't have.
And in addition to that, it's not just your tourism that we're talking about here. We're also talking quality of life. When these big interests come, you know, into a town, such as we know by the Interstate Amazon and these fulfillment centers, they're not looking at just a little set of factors. They're looking at, what's your quality like? Do you have good roads? Do you have good parks?
Yeah.
Do you have things that will make people want to come here, be engaged, and, you know, build a community? So when this type of thing goes on, I mean, that's all part of the fabric of your county. So.
Downtown Wi-Fi, all those things.
Just a thing while we're on KD. What is the situation with equestrian horses out there or no? Is that allowed or?
No.
Okay. Have you had any people proposing or wanting or?
Not since 1989.
That's been a while.
It's been a long time. Okay. And they couldn't put it together, and I ended up asking them to leave.
Okay.
They tear up stuff.
Oh, they do.
Well, they wouldn't stay on the trail. They didn't finish building the trail like they were going to, and then they started just riding all over Fox River Park. And when it's soft, the horse makes a pretty deep footprint. So we had to ask them to either, you know, finish up the trail and stay on the trail and leave, and they just quit and walked away. So.
Oh, well, you do have horse ones, but they're totally managed differently.
Right.
You know, in the California.
All right, thank you.
Okay, John.
Wait, you have to vote on?
Oh, we have to do that one.
I think so.
No.
So moved.
For the grant. To apply, to give John permission to apply for the grant.
Yeah.
You're the governor.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. For the committee.
All
aye.
Aye.
Thank you. Then you can continue, John.
I attached the Prairie Nature Center financials and newsletters. Other than that, I don't have anything to report there. At Katy Park, I resubmitted the grant that we did not receive last year for the parking lot by the dam, the road into the paving and building of the road into the park, the parking lots, the boat launch, and the handicap fishing pier. I did not have to resubmit a resolution because the county did not require one again, since there already is a standing one, nor did the DNR. So I basically found out where I was weak in the grant request, tweaked it up, and we're going to get that money this year.
We're planning on getting the money.
We're going to get it.
Okay. That's,
okay. I'm thinking we're shoo-in. Last year, the state told me I couldn't have all their money. Wait till next year. So that's
okay.
That's not it. That's not
the right. Same person there is at the state you were talking to last year, right?
Yeah.
We're still going to enlist some of the local legislators to help with that as well. Kind of get it on the radar. And
we're going to play this casino violin as loud as
possible. Yes. Yep.
So. What else is on the list? What else do we need?
There's two more things that I want.
Okay. Project list. Kemper Center, parking lot reconstruction, 66th Street renovation, and the lighting. The main storm sewer on the Kemper campus is in. They were connecting some of the downspouts. When I was down there on Friday, it was discovered that the old water main that runs up the underneath the driveway up to the parking lot to a fire hydrant on the southeast corner of the parking lot, and the 4-inch lateral going into the Simmons Gymnasium are cast iron and in pretty poor condition. In fact, the 4-inch lateral is leaking. So the decision was made to, we're going to replace those water mains instead of paving over them and having to chop up the new parking lot to repair them when they go. They did start on 66th Street today, ripping up the curbings and starting removal over there to widen the street for parking by the Anderson Arts Center. The pier legs, that's a different one. So that's all I have on that. The Brightonville lift station replacement, the new lift station is in. It was supposed to be switched over this afternoon from the old one and put into operation, and I don't know if they've got that done, but if they did, then they'll pull the old one out, and that'll be all finished up there. Kemper Pier, that's no change. The contractor was going to come in now and remove those legs and haul a riprap before we get too much further with pulling up the parking lot on the main campus, so there's no damage done there. The re-roof for the Fox River shop, that'll be starting any day now. That's to do that. Emerald ash tree, there's no change on the emerald ash board tree removal. The Silver Lake Mountain Bike Group is working every Sunday on the trails up until June, and then they take the summer off to ride. One thing we do have is a gentleman that works with the mountain bike team out of Central High School doing clinics at Silver Lake Park to encourage youth to get into mountain biking and also hopefully build mountain biking teams in Kenosha County and the surrounding area. So when I say we co-sponsored him, what we basically do is we reserve the pavilion for him so he has a place to do that. So there's really no expense to us. We just work with him and make sure he has a place to do those clinics. The Ho-Chunk property, haven't heard a word. They only meet once a year, and for some reason I always thought it was April. We are checking into them to see what's going on up there with those folks. The Bristol Town Hall folks could not get the money right now to move it, and their option was that we put in a parking lot for them and they could do it where it's at, but the administration chose not to do that. So what we're doing is we're just letting them see if they can raise the money to move it to the site they recommend or that they want, if they can do it, let that go. I haven't heard another peep on my cannon, but it's coming someday.
Okay.
All right. And building demolition, we have an old building that was built in 1937 at Pence. It was built as a laboratory with two apartments in it for the cabbage scientists to study the cabbage crop in Kenosha County. And after a few years of doing that, they moved out and deeded it to Kenosha County. But the building was never built to be a permanent building. It was built more on the order of like a CCC barracks. It wasn't all that great. Well, that building is in really rough shape, and we've disconnected the gas and moved the stuff we stored out of it, and we're just waiting for the center's fire department to come and burn it out.
This is at Pets?
At Pets, right in the shop yard. And that's all I have.
Thank you, John.
Mr. Chairman, I'll just give a brief update for John's assistant, too, that we've been interviewing for, and we had even better luck there. There was a number of folks that looked really solid. We do have an offer out to a person, and that one I'm hesitant to name a name or anything because we haven't heard that he's given notice of his shop yet, but just very encouraged, and I'm confident at the next meeting we will have a name and a face and kind of a full bio on the person. At this point, it appears pretty solid.
And he has spent time here with John already.
Yep.
And John is very pleased.
I can tell everybody around here you'll have a real parser after that. This guy's good. He doesn't like him.
So that raise, man.
Sure. I'll do a handout just to
bring the committee up to speed with where Brookside is. Meeting regularly. Architects, engineers, construction managers. And this is a summary.
So just to refresh everybody, for those not intimate with construction process and design process, there's basically three phases of developing the drawing.
Thank you.
We're in the schematic.
Good night, John.
The schematic phase, which is basically the concept phase. The schematic drawings have been completed. That basically pulls together all of the space requirements by meeting with staff and identifying where space fits and so forth. Taking that broad concept that was developed last summer by the architects and really starting to get it a little more firmed up. When we're done with schematic phase, we move into what's called design development stage. That's when the drawings actually start to have the real meat and potatoes put in place as far as electrical, mechanical, and so forth. That's started today, that phase. So what you got before you is the schematic budget that was prepared by Camozzi. This is based on the schematic drawings put together by EU. And basically what it shows is this. It shows that everything is still on budget for what was originally proposed as the base kind of construction project last year that the board voted on. What we have done, though, is we've identified a couple of key, what we're defining as alternates, add alternates, that we would like to consider as the project moves forward if funds are available to do them. If you look at the picture attached, I've attached this for a couple reasons. The building footprint of the new addition has changed from what was conceptually designed last summer. We've now got a pretty firm footprint for what the building, the new addition, is going to look like. It's those four little legs at the upper kind of left-hand part of the drawing. That's actually the most left pod. There is the CBRF part of the project. That's a single-story building, as was originally proposed. And then the other two that are pointing kind of straight, essentially west on this drawing, those two That's actually a two-story facility, and that's for residents that would be getting physical therapy. Now, the first alternate that's identified on the budget summary here is that green area underneath the new building. There was no basement originally proposed as at the concept stage. As we dug into this thing, there's just so many operational as well as just best use of space reasons to somehow incorporate a basement into a portion of that building. One of the main reasons operationally is if you look at this drawing right now, the leg of the existing building that's just to the right of the orange section, that big orange section is an existing parking lot right now. So if you look at that, the employee entrance right now and all the deliverables in terms of supplies, dry supplies, food supplies, and so forth, come in the very tip of that leg of the existing building. So in the absence of an employee entrance or a shipping and receiving area into these new addition areas, you can imagine all the time that would be spent. If I'm an employee, I come in, I literally punch in as I come in this end of the building right now, right here. And then if I'm an employee, I punch in here, and my workstation is over in these buildings, which this is going to employ typically 40 to 50 people at any given time are going to be working in these new areas. Well, I punch in here, I walk all the way along here, over here, go in there, and then I come over to my workstation. And I generally am going to bump into Sally and probably Tom on my way over there. So after I punch in, I'm probably going to walk 15 minutes of non-productive time before I get to where I'm actually going to be working. That's something that's going to, we're going to pay for over and over and over again as long as the building exists. Same is true for supplies. If these buildings are going to have a substantial number of consumables associated with them, just like the rest of the building has. But if everything has to come in this point of entry, and again, get transported, come up a elevator, and come and work its way all the way over to here, it's really going to be inefficient. We're going to pay for that inefficiency for the life of the building. So, although it was not part of the original concept, we're going to determine, at this point, we're pretty firm that we have to have some basement space, and some of the topography actually lends itself to this area right here pretty easily. There's, from the edge of this green space here where the entrance would be into the basement to the parking lot, it's only about 30 feet, but the elevation changes about 10 feet vertically in that 30 feet. So it'd be very easy to create a walkway in and a shipping double doors. It wouldn't be a shipping dock, but we'd be able to take supplies in. So you could easily take supplies in and employees could enter there. We could create in that basement space eventually probably an employee lounge so that they could come in, punch in, hang their coats up, their lockers, so folks that work in this area could punch in here, come up the stairs or the elevator, and they're in their workstation. Same with supplies. So although this wasn't part of the original concept, it really is an ad alternate that we're going to work very diligently to figure out a way to put this into the structure. It just, there's a whole bunch of reasons from a mechanical standpoint too, mechanical and electrical. Without a basement in that new facility, we'd have a lot of floor space on the first floor, which is high-value space. It's where the residents are going to be living. We're going to have mechanical closets. We're going to have sub-panels for electrical. We can put a lot of that stuff down in the basement. So that's probably the biggest thing of the three alternates that we've identified as value-added kind of things. If we can manage the project, value engineer enough other costs out of the project to accommodate these things, that's what we're going to try to do. The basement is probably the biggest one. The second one I'll talk about is the existing parking in the main part, the existing parking right now for the main entrance at the building. Anybody's been out there, which I'm sure you all have been, it is marginal. It's always been marginal. There's been an inadequate amount of space. On any given day, there's any number of folks that are parked in the grass, the lawn's all tore up, the asphalt's broken up. And I think a lot of what was done here was in an attempt to preserve the now long-deceased trees that aren't even there anymore. They tried to preserve as much tree, and that's an admirable thing, but to the detriment of really, you've got a total of 47 parking spots right now in that main area. That's shared by customers coming in to visit loved ones, as well as some staff that works in the office area. What's proposed off on the left here, again, it's just an ad alternate we've identified, by rerouting the actual entrance into the facility off of Washington Road, we would hopefully at some point be able to address, and again, if anybody's come from the west on Washington Road to pull into Brookside, what do you have to do? There's no turn lane to cross over. You have to park. If you've got a small vehicle, you can kind of nestle in between the oncoming traffic and wait there, and then finally make a U-turn and head back to the entrance. It's a very dangerous situation. If you're coming from the east, there's no right turn lane. So you're in a lane of through traffic when you decide to pull off into Brookside. Until you enter the driveway, you're in the actual lane of traffic. At some point, we would like to address that whole situation as well. And in order to do that, we'd like to propose changing this driveway from where it is currently to actually on the other side of where the sign is currently and establishing parking in this manner. This would take us from a total of 47 parking spots currently to 145, so you pick up just about 100 spots. You're really no further away from the front door as you are with the furthest spot now. So for folks that are challenged physically to get to that door, which a lot of folks that visit there are, you've created 100 more parking spots closer to the main entrance. We've also created at least the conditions for straightening out the crossover situation at some point in time too by putting the driveway here would actually line up with Mr. Jantz's driveway right across the street, so that it would create the geometry needed to safely make the proper kind of crossover. So again, don't know if we're going to have the funds, but at this point we've framed out at least the concept of what could do to correct a bunch of traffic ills and create a lot more parking, quality parking, close to that front entrance. So that's the second alternate. And the third alternate is to completely then re-blacktop, resurface, actually probably grind and restore all of the parking lot in this back part of the Ring Road. Those are the three alternates that show up down below on the budget. So that's kind of an explanation of kind of where we're at in the process. I'm comfortable at this point. If you look down the way Camozzi's got this set up, the site work, he's estimating at just over $1.2 million, let's call it, for all the site work. The new additions, I should say the cold storage building, the outbuilding, which is shown here, yeah, you can kind of see it, the outline of it here. This is just a storage building for equipment, both maintenance equipment for the campus, as well as if there's other things, larger things, beds and things like that, that can't be stored in the building, could be stored out here. That's that second line, the new additions, that's basically all of the new construction for the two pods there, just over $11.2 million. Renovation of the existing building, just under $3 million. That's complete renovation of the existing building. I shouldn't say complete renovation, it's focused renovation of the existing building. It doesn't touch every square foot of that building by any stretch. It's got testing in there for commissioning the building when we're done. Permits figured at 1% of the project. Fixing an existing water system, problem with the existing boiler is estimated at $50,000. And we've got a contingency, which at this point is the plug figure. Whatever is undesignated funds, it's $882,000, which is just over 5% of the project budget. So it's a safe number at this point. So at this point, like I say, in the first phase of kind of just delving into things at the schematic level, I think we're in a pretty good spot with stuff. It looks like the project's going to be doable. We're going to basically work to put that basement into the project somehow, some way, because it just brings too much necessary value to the whole project. If we do the building without the basement, I really think we're doing a disservice to the community in doing that. So that's an overview of kind of where the whole project's at right now. Any questions?
Who brought the basement idea to the table?
Well, I think that basement idea came up actually in the concept planning last year. And when they looked at it, in a kind of a whole hog kind of way, and so they looked at it under like a substantially larger piece of the building. And then the estimate at a concept stage was over $1 million. And so I think they took it off the table and just said, we're just not going to be able to do that. So as we got into this and started to actually frame things out and look where now things actually, after we had site surveys done and saw how topography kind of, and where we were going to put the buildings physically and allowed for grade and things like that, this limited basement isn't going to cost anywhere near that. I think it's actually probably going to come in actually under a $500,000. I think the number we've got is conservative at the estimate right now. But it's good. So we basically resurrected the idea that was originally brought up in the at the concept planning stage and just looked at it a little more refined.
In terms of the rest of the campus, is everything else built on grade that is on a slab?
On the new construction or the existing stuff?
Existing.
Existing, no. Existing, we've got a basement under this wing here, under a chunk of this wing, and that's where the kitchen's currently located.
Okay. That's right.
Employee lounge, yep, that's where.
Okay. And the new construction, all on slab or?
It would be all slab on grade with the exception of this chunk here where we create that basement. Yep.
Then my second question is on the additional parking, that would have a total of
145 is what we're estimating right now.
And the existing has how many?
47, if I counted right. It's plus or minus one.
So at some point, not right now, and I don't want to, you know, take a bunch of time in our meeting here, but I would like to just see a ratio of, I don't know how to do it, between employees, users, in its existing phase, as it is currently, and proposed 145 to the ratio of basically staff and patients, just to
okay.
See how the numbers shake out. Interesting, that's all I have.
Let's see, a couple other notes. We met with Department of Health, State Department of Health, 2 weeks ago. One of the things that we identified early on in the project is that in the existing building, there, most folks are familiar with, when you go into a renovation situation, if something doesn't meet current code, if you mess with it as part of the renovation, then you're required to bring it up to code. And in the existing building, one of the most costly things that could fall into that category is down all the long hallways, the cold air return is not hard ducted in any of those hallways. There's basically a plenum, there's a cavity. So there's duct for the inbound air, but all the air coming back just comes back in that cavity created between the acoustic ceiling and the drywall ceiling up above. There's basically a large cavity that air just comes back through. That was totally kosher when the building was built. The code has since been changed. We are going to work diligently. In fact, we're submitting something this week based on the conversation we had with the health, State Health Department a couple weeks ago that argues why what we're going to do isn't going to mess with that existing thing, and therefore we won't have to bring it up to code. We're going to lay that argument out and submit that to them on May 8th. We feel pretty confident that we're going to be successful in the argument, but we don't know for 100% certainty. And we did get an estimate. If we did have to go back in and actually bring all those things up to code, it's about a $400,000+ adventure. So our preliminary meeting with them was good, but again, till we know, we don't know. So I just want to make folks aware of that, that's kind of still floating around out there. That's it for that. Let's see, 516, we're going to submit our initial package for our conditional use permit to the city. And one of the other things we've done is we engaged Focus on Energy in a newer program they've got where any new construction or significant renovation, you can get them involved on the front end and they actually assist with the design. It's a whole separate division of Focus on Energy just for this design group. We met with them last week or the week before, last week, and we have the potential to get a pretty sizable Focus on Energy chunk back too as we develop the building. So that was very encouraging. It was a very impressive exercise we went through
very kind of engineering-centered exercise. That's pretty much it on the Brookside project, unless anybody's got any questions. Last couple of things, just in general. There is an energy team that Jim actually worked closely with UW Extension and started that last year. And that team meets fairly regularly, monthly. Now it's going to be bi-monthly. We've got a list of probably 18 projects that working closely with Focus on Energy folks we put together. We're going to start to bring those monthly to the committee so that you can see kind of what's going on with lighting or HVAC projects, so you can see where those energy technology is a line item in the budget where you can see where that money's being spent as we go forward here, what the paybacks are. And it's a very impressive set of things that we're working with. None of them are monstrous. They're all smaller, but they all have a real good payback to them. And the last piece, we've been working with the personnel department to develop, in light of the post-Act 10 world, where a lot of our supervisors, older ones that have never worked in a non-union environment, newer ones that have been recently promoted and just aren't familiar with effective supervisory techniques, we've developed a program working with someone from Gateway, and I'm really excited about this. We're going to start it in June for all the public works new supervisors and seasoned supervisors to participate in. We're going to do a program for 5 weeks every other week through the end of July. Then we're going to take about a six-week break where folks actually hopefully will start to employ some of these new things. And then we're going to start it back up in late September with round two and start to just keep pushing everybody in a more positive, progressive kind of management direction. That's it. Come on in.
Anybody else?
Motion to adjourn.
Supervisor Grady, second by Supervisor Frederick, to adjourn. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Well, thank you, everyone.
Thank you, Kevin.
Thanks for the updates, Ron.
Yeah, I thought everyone would find that Brookside stuff very interesting.
I do.